Hey, welcome to the Power Entrepreneurs Podcast. I'm Jake Rosenberg, and I'm here with my co-host, Jacob Usani, and this is the show for entrepreneurs and business owners to get a behind-the-scenes look at how the uber-successful around us think and operate. He's the founder and chief visionary officer of BNI, the world's largest business networking organization. With over 8,900 chapters throughout every populated continent of the world, last year alone, BNI generated 11.5 million referrals, resulting in $15.4 billion worth of business for its members. He's a university professor, amateur magician, black belt in karate, and a New York Times best-selling author with 23 books. Called the father of modern networking by CNN and one of the top networking experts by Forbes, Dr. Ivan Meisner is considered to be one of the world's leading experts on business networking, and we're honored and excited to sit down with him today here on the Power Entrepreneurs Podcast.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ivan, for joining us today on the Power Entrepreneurs Podcast.
My pleasure. It's good to be here.
So why don't you give us a little bit of background of what kind of jump started you into the entrepreneur world and what got you started in business?
Oh, listen, I think I was an entrepreneur as a kid. My first business where I actually had an employee, I think I was about 14 years old. So I've been an entrepreneur at heart for a long, long time. I started my first business as an adult. Actually, I owned a trucking business, which I can't drive a tractor trailer to save my life, but I did the contracts and whatnot. I had a partner that ran the business. And then I was a management consultant. So, I mean, I did business consulting as a career for several years before I started this crazy BNI thing, which BNI now, for those who don't know, BNI is a business and professional networking organization. We have 9,150 groups in more than 70 countries around the world. So I've been doing this a long time. I started BNI in 1985.
So what kind of drew you into starting BNI? I mean, you know, you started, like you said, in the trucking business. What brought you into this whole different world of business?
Yeah, well, while I co-owned the trucking business, I was also in management. I was assistant to the president for a transportation company, and then I was a general manager for a light manufacturing plant. So I had a lot of business experience before I started my consulting. So BNI, I'd like to tell you I had this vision of an international organization, but the truth is I needed some referrals for my management consulting business. And I think BNI is the classic example of necessity being the mother of invention. I created something to help my business and to help my friends in business, and it just blew up. We ended up opening 20 groups the first year, really by accident. I did not plan on running a networking organization. As a matter of fact, the first people who asked me, you know, would you help me open up my own chapter? I told them no, because this isn't what I do. I'm a business consultant. But they talked me into it, and after a year, we had 20 groups. And that's when I realized that I had struck a chord in the business community that I didn't really anticipate. We don't teach this in colleges and universities anywhere in the world. We don't teach networking, referral marketing. And so people were clueless how to do it. And we not only provided the platform, we provided training on how to do it.
Why do you feel that they don't teach us essentially the most important business skills that we need out there to succeed? Why do you think they don't teach us those skills?
So I have a very strong opinion on that. Do you have a lot of full-time tenured professors who listen to your podcast?
Not many.
Okay, good, because they will hate my answer. they will post hate mail responses. So you got to
understand. I'm sure.
You got to understand, I taught at a university for 16 years. I was an adjunct, so I was a part-time faculty. I was also on the board of trustees for a university for 8 years. And so I saw, I mean, it was a little less than 8 years, but for a number of years, I saw the university process from the professor to the board which the president of the university reports to. So I saw everything in there. here's a theory on why we don't teach this. Courses are created by the full-time tenured professors of university. As an adjunct, I had no control over the courses. It's the full-time tenured professors that control the curriculum. So my theory is that most full-time tenured professors in business have never run a business, ever. And yet they teach business in universities. It just blows my mind that we have people teaching how to run a business who've never run a business. And that's why they don't teach networking. They don't teach emotional intelligence. They don't teach social capital. Think about it. Most universities don't have a core curriculum university course on closing techniques in sales. Really? Really? How could you not do that? Well, it's because most full-time tenured professors have never run a business. Heaven forbid that they get their hands dirty and make a sale. They wouldn't want to do that. And so I don't think we're going to teach this at colleges and universities in my lifetime. I just don't think it's going to happen. Because if we're not teaching sales, we're not going to teach networking. But I'm okay with that because I'm happy to teach people how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I've always had this strong belief. You know, Jacob and I are both college dropouts, high school. We haven't really learned business in that world the way many people have. And I've always had this strong belief that I'd rather learn it from someone who has the real world experience than from a college professor, which, as you said, generally they don't have that real world experience. Do you
recommend? Can I just insert something there? Sure. Many of the adjunct professors do have real world experience. I mean, I taught, like I said, for 16 years, and I have a lot of real world experience. Right. So you will have some professors, but it's not the full-time tenured professors. And I do believe in higher education. I mean, you know, I have 10 years of college. I believe in it. So I wouldn't just throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I think what you're saying is also true. You don't necessarily, you certainly don't need a doctoral degree to run a business. That's for sure.
Right. So to kind of feed off of that, what would you recommend? You know, like you said, don't throw college out the window. There's plenty of benefits to going to college, yeah, to going to any sort of formal education. What would you recommend for someone that's going through education, but they also know that they're missing out on these vital skills for business? How do they educate themselves?
So, I mean, you know, if you are going to college, here's the good news about college, in my opinion. And I'm going to give you a gross generalization, and not everybody fits within this box. But my experience in owning businesses for the last 40 years, BNI has been 35 years, is that people with a college education, the one thing that college can teach you is how to think. Not necessarily what to think, but how to think, how to solve problems, how to address issues, how to think critically. My experience in hiring employees with a college education is that they're better at just giving a project to and saying, here's the parameters of the project, run with it. If you have a problem, see me. Now, if I did that to someone without any college education at all, and please remember there are exceptions. I had one really notable exception who worked for me for many years. But if I hand this to somebody with no college education, they're like, what? What? I don't know how to do that. Nobody's ever told me how to do that. And they get all freaked out because they've never been handed assignments and told them to figure it out. So I think that it teaches you how to think, and that's what I like about it. That said, there's some big, gigantic holes in our educational system. And entrepreneurship, I think, is one of them, especially at the undergraduate level.
Hmm. So in the education side of entrepreneurship, do you have any ideas of how to maybe reform the educational world a little bit? Because that is a kind of a hot topic these days. People are talking about education.
Oh, yeah, I know the answer to that. But your professors will hate me again. They'll hate me twice.
Let's do it.
Yeah, get rid of tenure. Get rid of tenure. Tenure means I'm fat and happy, and I don't really need to do anything else. Tenure is the worst part of the educational system, certainly in the United States. And now this will really tick off people. I think, I'm not going to get political. I can't get political because I run BNI. But I think there are some really serious issues with our educational system, tenure being one of them. You know, I just saw professors around me. I saw professors around me who were full-time professors who would get really upset because they had to teach four classes in a quarter. Four. And because there's a full-time workload for a tenured professor in a quarter system is three courses. I was part-time teaching three courses and running a national company. At that time, BNI wasn't. No, I take it back. It was global. I was running an international company and teaching three courses a quarter. And the full-time tenured professors were complaining because they had to teach a fourth course one quarter. And, you know, they just, when you're tenured, you have to like massively break the law to get kicked out. Anyway, let me step down from my soapbox now.
I'm one of the coaches in the John Maxwell team, and I heard your mentorship, you know, your speech. I don't know if it was at the conference or I listened to it after, but and you were speaking about all these different techniques on networking. When you talk to a guy, you know, you kind of you're off shift to the side. When you talk to a woman, and you're more face to face. Can you like brush up on some
happy
of those?
Happy to do that. And first, let me say about John Maxwell. The John Maxwell training program, the leadership program, is absolutely the best leadership training in the world. Hands down, John Maxwell is the world's leading expert on leadership. So anybody listening to this, I highly recommend the training program. And I certainly recommend his book, starting with the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. So great, great content. Your question to me, Jacob, was about some techniques in networking. The one you're talking about is what I call open twos, open threes. Now, you're listening to this podcast. Well, imagine you have the God view. You're looking down on a room. If you're looking down on the room and two people are standing perpendicular to each other, talking to one another, it's very difficult to strike up a conversation with them because they're in what's called a closed two. What you want to do in networking environments is look for open twos, open threes, or open groups. If you are running a networking meeting, you want to train your people to stand in open twos, open threes, and open groups. An open two would look more like, again, from the God view, looking down, it would look like a V. Two people are talking to one another, but they're slightly askew. An open three would look like a U. So there's an open spot. And the reason this is important is that you want networking to feel inclusive. And this is such a subtle but significant technique to make people feel welcome when they come in and they see these open spots and they can slide in and have a conversation. So you want to train the people who are at the meeting to stand that way. And then visitors to the meeting will more naturally feel welcome because there are open spots for them to just walk in. That's one technique out of, one book on how to network effectively. But that's a fun one, especially with the slides. And go test this. If you're listening to this podcast, test it. It works amazingly well. Give it a shot.
Okay. Now, and what other techniques are there that you can brush up on? So let's start with some like beginner techniques, how to get their feet.
So let's talk about follow-up in a moment. But first, I want to give you two big themes. You want to network effectively, you first have to think about the mindset. Everybody always talks about the skill set, the techniques. But first, I believe you have to talk about the mindset. What's the right mindset to network effectively? So I'm going to talk about a technique. I'll talk about what I call the 24/7/30 technique for follow-up. But first, let me talk about mindset. The foundation of everything I teach is what I call the VCP process. Visibility, credibility, profitability. If you don't get VCP, nothing else you do in networking will help. It won't work. I went to a networking event years ago. I was a speaker. I did a keynote. It was a lot of networking. I asked, there were 900 people in the room, and I asked all 900 people when I opened my presentation, how many of you are here today hoping to, you know, maybe just possibly sell something? 900 people raised their hands. I said, okay, second question. How many of you are here today hoping to, you know, maybe just possibly buy something? Gentlemen, no one raised their hands. Not one single person. This is what I call the networking disconnect. People show up wanting to sell, but nobody's there to buy. And when you do that, networking is no more than a face-to-face cold calling opportunity. It's not the best way to network. So what do you do? Why go to a networking meeting? You go to work your way through the VCP process. You have to first be visible. People have to know who you are and what you do. Then you establish credibility where people know who you are, they know what you do, they know you're good at it. That's where you develop a positive reputation. Then and only then can you get to visibility to profitability. You go from visibility to credibility. Then you get to profitability where people know who you are, they know what you do, they know you're good at it. And they're willing to give you referrals on a long-term basis. You ever hear the expression, it never hurts to ask?
Yeah.
Yeah? They're dead wrong. They're absolutely, totally wrong. It does hurt to ask for a referral if there's no relationship. In one of my books, we did a book on the difference between men and women and how they network. It's an odd title. It's called Business Networking and Sex, Not What You Think. It's about the difference between... Yeah, but that's actually part of the book, Not What You Think. And we called this process, we called it premature solicitation, which you don't want to say fast three times, it'll get you in trouble. But that's where you jump over visibility, you jump over credibility, and you try to get right to profitability. And so it does hurt to ask if you don't have a relationship. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So you start with the mindset. Networking is more about farming than it is about hunting. It's about working your way through the VCP process. All right, that's mindset. Now let's do another skill set. Here's a follow-up. Here's the system I recommend for people to follow up when they meet them. So if you're, and you connect differently with people based on where you are in the relationship. If you meet somebody for the first time at a networking event, you're at visibility. This is the follow-up system I recommend for visibility. If you know somebody and you're at credibility, you can dive right in and have a conversation because you know each other. If you're at profitability, that's an even higher level of conversation because you're already referring each other. So this is how to follow up with people that you're trying to create visibility with. You're not past visibility yet. First thing you do when you meet them is, you know, there's a lot of questions you can ask, but get them to open up, talk a little bit about who they are and what they do. And then it varies depending on the culture. You can't do this in every culture, but ask them if you can write something on the back of their card from your conversation so you remember who they are. I go to networking events, you know, I end up with 20, 30 cards. I don't remember all of these conversations unless I jot a note about who this person was. There are cultures where that's not appropriate. In North America, no problem. But in other countries, particularly in Asia, you don't write access cards. You don't have a note. So here's your follow-up. Within 24 hours, reach out to them. Either do a handwritten note or use something like Send Out Cards, which I really love, which is an online service to send out a physical card, or send them an email. But within 24 hours, reach out to them and say, hey, it's really nice meeting you guys. It was really nice meeting you. I enjoyed our conversation about, and then you look at the back of the card to remember a little bit about the person. I enjoyed our conversation. I hope our paths cross again. And do not sell to them. Don't sell to them. If they're interested in your product or service, they'll tell you. Right now, it's about building a relationship. So within 24 hours, reach out, touch them. Tell them it was nice to meet them. Within 7 days, connect with them on social media. So one of the questions you might want to ask when you meet them is what social media platform do you use the most? Because that's where you want to definitely connect with them on. For me, it's Facebook. I have a public Facebook page, but I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, but I do a lot of my stuff on Facebook. So find out where they are. What I learned years ago was that it doesn't matter where you are. If you want to build a relationship with someone else, you have to go where they are. I learned this actually from my kids. My eldest daughter, when I tried to call her on the telephone, she's 33 now, so this was like 13, 14 years ago. When I tried to call her on a phone, she wouldn't answer. But if I texted her, boom, she'd respond. I remember calling her up and saying, honey, remember, this is a phone. You can actually talk in this thing. Yeah, Dad, okay. So I knew that if I wanted to talk to her, I had to text her. My next daughter, I call her nothing. I text her nothing. I said to my wife, what do I do? My wife says, oh, you got it. Now this is again, probably 10 years ago. I said, what do you do? She said, well, you got to WhatsApp her. I said, well, what's WhatsApp? I don't know what WhatsApp is. So I downloaded WhatsApp. I think I have 10 people on my WhatsApp. She's one of them. She was the first one. So if I instant messaged her on WhatsApp, boom, she'd respond immediately. If I call her nothing, text her nothing, WhatsApp, she'd respond. Then there was my son. I'd call him nothing. I'd text him nothing. WhatsApp was old school to him. He was a few years older. So I'm thinking, I remembered he's a gamer, and he loves a platform called Steam. You guys know about Steam?
Yeah.
You're millennials. You know about Steam. So he knows about Steam. He used Steam. Well, Steam has an instant messaging feature. So I was in my 50s. I downloaded Steam. I bought a game so that I can instant message my son, and he would respond. The lesson my children taught me was it didn't matter how I wanted to talk to them. What mattered is how they wanted to talk to me. And if I wanted to maintain a relationship with them as they were going through those years, I needed to go where they are, not where I was. For me, I wanted to talk to them on the phone, but that's not where they were at the time. So I needed to go where they are. So that's a lesson in networking. Go where they are, not where you are. If they're on Instagram, connect with them on Instagram. Last, and don't sell to them. Comment on their posts. Read what they're interested in. Get to know a little bit more about the person. Then within 30 days, 24/7, 30, within 30 days, reach out to them and set up an appointment to meet with them. Say, hey, I've learned a little bit about what you do, followed some of your stuff on Facebook or wherever. I'd love to get together and learn more about you. And maybe you'd be willing to learn a little bit about me and what I do. Could we get together for coffee? And meet with them and get to know them a little bit better. And again, don't sell to them. Not yet. Look, if they want, even a blind squirrel can find a nut. You'll stumble over business, but that's not what networking is about. Networking is about building relationships. So that's a three-part one technique, 24/7, 30, three parts. And it's a good follow-up system.
That is fast.
And at what point in the relationship process do you sell, or is it like you never sell? You just let them sell themselves to you.
No, there's nothing wrong with asking for referrals. Look, if they're interested in your product or service, and once they know what you do, they're very likely to say, "Hey, tell me more about this because I might be interested," or some words like that. Look, the truth is, the best way to get referrals is through business associates who you build a relationship with. Because you know, if networking is more about farming than it is about hunting. If you eat what you kill, you're not going to be generating a lot of business. What you want to do is find referral partners who will refer people to you. So the short answer to your question is you don't ask for a referral until you're at credibility and not a minute before. When that person knows, likes, and trusts you, you're at credibility. And by the way, it doesn't matter where you are in that relationship. What matters is where they are in that relationship. You have to make sure that they know, like, and trust you. Now, one of the best ways to get somebody to know, like, and trust you is to help them in some way. And I don't mean sell them your product or service. I mean help them in some way. When I was a business consultant, one of the things I'd do all the time is I'd send them articles. One of the questions I ask when I meet people is, tell me about some of the challenges you have. When I do it with a one-to-one with people, I'll say, so what are some of the challenges you have in your business? And they'll tell me. And I'm almost always able to recommend a book, recommend an article. And I used to mail it to them. Now I email them the book. I email them the article. So if you can help somebody, then you expedite the relationship a little bit more. You build the trust quicker. And then it's a little more comfortable for you to say, hey, if you know anybody that could use my services, we've talked several times. This is what I do. It'd be great. You know, if you're willing to give me a referral, that'd be fantastic. That's when you ask. You ask when there's trust. If you can help somebody, then you expedite the relationship a little bit more. You build the trust quicker. And then it's a little more comfortable for you to say, hey, if you know anybody that could use my services, we've talked several times. This is what I do. It'd be great. You know, if you're willing to give me a referral, that'd be fantastic. That's when you ask. You ask when there's trust.
So to kind of hop over to the other side of this whole networking game, you know, you've founded BNI, which is by far the largest organization in the world, hosting, you know, business meetups all over the world. What's something or some things that you've learned that make an event or a meetup successful and differentiates it from because there's people that are doing events all the time, and you go to most networking events and you don't really get anything out of it. What differentiates a good event?
Well, you know, it really depends what your goal is. You know, some people, their goal is to mix and mingle. That's the goal of the event. Now, a lot of people, that's not what they really want. They want business. But for other people, it's a way to connect with individuals. By the way, I'm the founder of the world's largest networking face-to-face networking organization. But I recommend groups like the Chamber of Commerce, because I think the Chamber is a great way to mix and mingle with people. You meet a lot of new people. I recommend the Chamber as a networking organization. But people go to chambers and they don't get any business and they walk away and they're frustrated. Well, that's not really the purpose of a chamber. The chamber is to make connections. Then you do the 24/7/30 and you follow up with some people. If your network is a mile wide and an inch deep, it will never be powerful. Your network needs to be wide and deep in places. That is, with certain people, you go deep. So the answer to your question really is, what's the goal of the network? The goal in the network I formed with BNI was to generate referrals. We were unabashedly focused on referrals. That's why you come. Now, in order to do that, you have to have systems and rules and accountability. As I tell you, rules and accountability are critical for a network, and I believe they are, but some people don't like them. You know, people, there are people who don't want to join BNI because, oh, there's too many rules. Well, look, hockey without rules would be boxing on ice. You know, you got to have rules. If that's your goal, if your goal is to generate referrals, then there's got to be systems in place and accountability and recognition, and those kinds of things have to be in place. So it really depends on what your goal is. There are a lot of networking organizations where their goal is to just mix and mingle, just meet lots and lots of people. Okay, if that's the goal, you can do that. My goal was build deep relationships and generate referrals. By the way, last year, 2018, BNI passed 11.2 million. 11.2 million referrals. We generated for our members, those 11.2 million referrals generated $14.2 billion worth of business for our members all around the world. So I think we're doing pretty well on my core mission for BNI to generate referrals.
And I would say arguably the reason BNI is so successful is probably because you've focused on building those deeper relationships than just on the surface level. So, you know, let's step back a minute. You know, as you mentioned, when you started out with BNI, the goal wasn't at first to become a global organization.
Right.
What is some advice you would give to an entrepreneur, business owner, on scaling a business, even if they don't want to be a global organization, but right, you know, scaling is important?
So here's a lot of things that I didn't really learn in business school that I think are important. So a couple of these that I'm going to share with you I did, but some I didn't. Here's probably the single most important issue for entrepreneurs. And I see them, people do this wrong all the time. You want to be successful in business? Do 6 things 1,000 times, not 1,000 things 6 times. I constantly see businesses that are always chasing bright, shiny objects. Oh, look at that. I'll do that for a little while. No, that didn't work so well. Now I'm going to try this. And they bounce around. When I was a business consultant, it really surprised me that 50% of all businesses failed within 3 to 5 years. After, you know, being a consultant for a number of years and running BNI, it now surprises me that 50% make it, because they're constantly chasing bright, shiny objects. I think the businesses who are successful are the ones who, and by the way, it doesn't have to be 6, it could be 5, it could be 7. It's do a handful of things, but you do them 1,000 times. If I have any superpower at all as a business person, it's that I'm a dog with a bone. I figure out a strategy and I do it and do it and do it and do it until it's working well. And so I think that's what you got to do. Now, where do you find the 6 things? You find them by podcasts like this, where you listen to people and you go, okay, here's somebody that's successful. They know what they're doing. I'm going to watch what they're up to. I'm going to watch their YouTube. I'm going to read their books. I'm going to listen to this podcast where I can pick up these ideas. And then I'm going to create a strategy based on mentors, both virtual and real. and I will do six things 1,000 times. The number one mistake I think that entrepreneurs make. You want some more?
Yeah, let's take
two more.
So here's another one. Never taught this in school. Never taught that last one in school. I believe ignorance on fire is better than knowledge on ice. Let me repeat that. Ignorance on fire is better than knowledge on ice. Now, when I started BNI, I was the poster child for ignorance on fire in terms of networking. I was a management consultant. I knew how to do that well. But networking, I didn't know what I was doing. I was making it up as I went. Why? Because we don't teach this in colleges and universities. So I'm trying to figure it out as I went, trying to codify it, write it all down, teach people how to do it, see what works, see what doesn't work. What I find is I find really intelligent people that are way too laid back and they're not motivated. When, especially as an entrepreneur, you're better off to hire somebody who doesn't quite know exactly how to do what they're doing, but they're on fire. And they've got the capacity, they just don't have the training. Because you can't afford the person who's got all the training. The problem is that a lot of people who have all the training are now complacent. You know, I've been there, done that, I can do this, and they're not on fire anymore. Now, the best is to hire somebody, you know, knowledge on fire. But that's really expensive for an entrepreneur. So I believe you first look for ignorance on fire. People who may not have all the skills yet, but you're willing to help them and train them. You bring them in, you help them, you train them, they're on fire, they're going to do way better than somebody that's knowledge on ice. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, here's another one. First part of this, everybody and their mother says. You're gonna nod your head like one of those dolls in the back window of a car that's like, yeah, I get it, okay. You got to set goals. You got to set goals, but everybody says that. So I'm going to give you two things that most people don't say. One is I recommend you set three levels of goals. Not one, but three levels of goals. Your top level is dancing on the roof, excited. You cannot believe you achieved that. It was such an unbelievable stretch, but that's really where you wanted to go. That's your highest level of goals. The mid-level is your target. You really, no matter what, you really want to hit that goal. That's your number. The lowest level or the floor is if you can't hit that goal, you should probably go into another business. Because if you can't hit that, it's just not going to work for you. I recommend three levels of goal setting, especially in the early days of your business. So there's one thing that most people don't teach. You certainly don't get that in school. Here's the second. Reverse engineer your goals. Reverse engineer them. So whatever goal you have for 12 months from now, what's your goal at 11, at 10, at 9, at 8, at 7, all the way back to what's your goal at the end of the first month? What's your goal at the end of January? What happens when people set goals is they set this goal and then you know, it's like 4 months in, 5 months in, and they go, oh gosh, how am I doing? I'm like, well, oh man, I'm way off, right? Like, oh, I can't believe I'm so far off. You gotta reverse engineer them and track them. I know the numbers for BNI, not monthly, not weekly, daily. I got a report today that said as of yesterday, BNI had 260,463 members. I get a daily report to track where I am in terms of my annual goals. Now, when I started BNI, I couldn't do a daily thing. It was, you know, I just didn't have the manpower to do that. So, you know, track your numbers, but track them at least weekly or monthly, at least weekly or monthly, so that you can stay on top of what your goals are. You can't hit a target you're not aiming at. You got to aim at it, and you got to know your numbers. How are those for a couple of suggestions?
Oh, those are fantastic.
So on the topic of entrepreneurship,
yeah.
A lot of people are doing outsourcing these days.
Outsourcing, yeah.
Outsourcing. What advice would you give to somebody who has their office, I mean, you know, who is outsourcing and they want to grow such an, either like the organization or their business?
Well, I think that's certainly the way of the future is outsourcing, no question about it. I mean, to some extent, I outsourced my consulting business back in the early 80s. You know, I started my consulting business around 83 and full time. And, you know, I used a number of consultants none of them. I didn't have an office. My office was in my house and I outsourced way back then. So I think that you've got to find high quality people, people that are good at what they do or they're on fire and you're willing to hold their hands and walk them through. And I think you also have to learn how to delegate effectively. Delegating effectively it requires two things. And most people don't talk about this. You delegate not only responsibility, but you delegate authority to make decisions. You got to delegate both authority and both responsibility and authority. So you have authority to make the decisions within this framework. And if you don't do that, then you might as well do the work yourself because they're going to be constantly coming back to you asking, what do I do next? What do I do next? So I'm a believer in outsourcing, but you got to also give them some control and some power to do the job and do the job right. And if they don't, the beauty of outsourcing is that it's a lot easier to terminate an independent contractor than it is to terminate an employee, especially in some states in the United States. Does that answer your question?
That does. That does answer the question. Now, so you wrote like over 15 books. How, like, what 20, is...
20, 25, but who's counting?
25 books. Wow. So what is the process of being able to just continuously write books without, I guess, overlapping on other books and always like feeding on new knowledge? What is your process when you write your books?
So up to total candor, you know, some of my books have overlap. I mean, they have to. If I'm doing another book on networking, I have to talk about VCP. So most of my books talk about VCP. So there's always a little bit of overlap because in order to launch into the next subjects that I have, that's the base, that's the foundation. So what's the process? For the last 20 years, I have always taken a day a week. Well, maybe not the last 20 years. For many years, actually for the first several books I wrote most of my books from like 11 p.m. till 3 or 4 in the morning, one day a week. So I would just work all night or most of the night on a book. Now, it's not everybody's a night owl, so do it in the morning. But the key is you got to set the time aside. You have to set the time aside. Do it at night, do it in the morning, doesn't matter, but do it. Now, later, as my company grew and I had employees, I took a day a week. And Wednesdays have, for the last at least 15 years, been my writing day. So on Wednesday, I take the whole day and I set it aside for writing. I'm writing articles, working on books, doing meetings with co-authors, talking about the book. So the process for me is, first, it starts with setting the time aside. Then the second part is to, if I have co-authors in particular, work out the table of contents. You actually work out the table of contents before you start writing the book. Because you have to know, it's like setting a goal. You got to know where you're headed. And will you change the table of contents by the time the book is done? Oh yeah, you'll change it. It might look like a completely different book when it's done, but you got to start with the end in mind. And so I start with the table of contents. If I have co-authors, I assign chapters to various co-authors. Usually I have one, maybe two co-authors. So individuals will have different chapters that they're in charge of, but our fingerprints are on all the chapters. That's sort of the process that I use. It takes at least a year to do a book, sometimes longer. The Business Networking and Sex book was based on a survey of 12,000 people. So that took years to do because of the survey. My latest book is called Who's in Your Room, and it's about the secret to creating your best life. It's one of the shortest books I wrote, but it took me a long time to write it because we wanted to make it really tight. We had the book up to 45,000 words, and we decided we wanted to make it 15,000 words. It took me a year to take it down from 45,000 to 15,000.
So how do you fit?
So on the topic of books,
15,000 words, you're fitting the secret to a good life. If you don't mind, just give us a little sneak peek.
Sure. So, you know, people are listening to this. They can't see it, but the book is very short. It's, you know, like 130 pages long or so as a book. But it's this. So here's the premise of the book. Imagine that you live your life in one room. Imagine you live your life in one room. And that one room has only one door. And that one door is an enter-only door. So that when people come into your life or into your room, they're there forever. You can never get them out. Now, luckily, this is a metaphor, but if it were true, guys, would you be more selective about who you let into your life?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, everybody always says that. So my question is then, why aren't we? Why aren't we more selective? So if you're listening to this podcast, I want you two guys to do this now. I want you to think of someone that you got out of your life, because people say to me, well, it's not really true, because you can get people out of your life. Okay, so I want you to think of somebody that you got out of your life. That maybe they were toxic, they were difficult, they were angry. You didn't like being around them. They're out of your life. I want you to think of a name. I want you to think of the experience that you had with them. Now, I'm not going to make you two guys share that name here on the podcast. But do you have someone in mind?
Sure.
Yeah. Can you remember what they did to you that made you angry? Yeah. If you're listening to this, I want you to do the same, because here's the deal. If they're still in your head, they're still in your room, because they have made an indelible mark on your life. People we meet and build a relationship with are there forever. People talk to me and they say, well, the room, you know, I got more than one room. I've got this room and that. No, you have one room. Here's the room. It starts on one side of your head and ends on the other side of your head. The room is your mind. We interviewed Dr. Daniel Amen, who did a PBS special on neuroscience. He's a neuroscientist and a psychiatrist. And he says that people's fingerprints, people that you have a relationship with, their fingerprints are all over your brain. The memories of the relationship you had will be there forever. So it's more than a metaphor. So we talk about in the book that you've got this room. How do you guard the room so that it's not a revolving door where anybody can just come in? And that's what the book talks about is, well, first of all, you got to get good with your values. If you don't know your values, you can't know how to guard your room. You guard your room with what we call the doorman. It's the doorman principle. Doorman is your conscious and subconscious mind. And when you know your values, and we have a whole section on the book to kind of help you think about what are your values. When you know your values, then you train yourself, you train your doorman to screen people out from getting in your life. Now, let's say you already have people in your life. You got to learn the techniques to deal with them. So you may be in, but baggage has to stay out. And you learn how to keep people's baggage out of your room. You want a technique on how to do that?
Sure.
Here it is in the book. You got to set boundaries and stand by those boundaries. And here's an example. Rick, one of the co-authors, his mother was very toxic. She had a lot of emotional issues when she was alive. And she passed away a number of years ago. But he would have a phone call with her every week on Sunday. And he said, I'd hang up and I was just always distraught because she was so toxic and she would talk about my brothers and sisters and it was horrible. And when he came up with the doorman principle and the boundaries, he learned to say to her mom, he said to her, Mom, I love you. I'm going to talk to you again next week, same time. But when you start going off a tangent about, and you get toxic about, you know, people that are in my life and you start talking about them, I'm going to say, Mom, I love you very much. I look forward to talking to you next week. I'll call you at the same time. Bye. And I'm going to hang up. He said he did that for 3 weeks in a row. And his mother never brought that baggage in again. And he said he had the rest of her life, which wasn't a lot longer, a year or two longer, was the best time he'd ever spent with her. Because they had deep conversations. It wasn't toxic. He set a boundary and he did it in a loving, caring way. And so that's how you set boundaries and you don't let people encroach on your values. We have a whole section on how do you say no and not be a jerk. And then we have a whole section on creating balance in your life. You want to know the secret to balance?
What is the work-life balance secret?
So here it is. You guys ready?
Let's do it.
This is right out of Who's in Your Room. The secret to balance. Forget about it. You'll never have it.
I was kind of expecting that.
Yeah, I was expecting, like, there's no such thing. It's either, it either works or it's not going to work.
But there's hope. There's hope. When I tell people, especially when I do a large audience and I say, forget about it, you'll never have it. There's always somebody in the front who goes, oh, I was hoping for an answer. All right, I'm going to give you an answer. I think this is a great answer. But I think you got to forget about balance. Because when we think about balance, we think of the scales of justice, you know, like scales of some kind. And that our life has to be in this like perfect balance. That our business life has to be in balance with our entrepreneurial life. And my gosh, if we're an entrepreneur, it's just not, it doesn't work that way. We have to be in balance with our health, with our spirituality, with our family. It all has to be in balance. And life's more of a juggling act than a balancing act. And so I don't think you can have a life of balance, but you can have a life of harmony. And this is different than balance. And it's more than semantics. Even the graphic, the logo for harmony, the yin and the yang, if you separate those two, they're out of balance. Separate, they're out of balance. But it's together that you can create a life of harmony. So how do you create a life of harmony? We have a whole chapter on how to create a life of harmony. I'll give you one, at least one technique. There's a lot of things you got to do, but here's one technique to start to create a life of harmony. It's three simple words. Be here now. Be here now. Wherever you are, be present. Don't be at home thinking about the project at work that's got to get done. Don't be at work thinking about the fact that you didn't spend time with the family last night. If you are present but your head is someplace else, you're not there. Wherever you are, be present to that moment. Fully engaged in that moment. I traveled throughout my career, guys. I traveled at least every other week for 30 years. My kids grew up. And you know, I was worried that they wouldn't, that they felt I was gone too much. I remember when my son, the youngest, was 17, I said to him, we're sitting there playing Halo. And he's kicking my butt. This is the kid with the Steam game. So I said to him, I said, buddy, was I around enough as you were growing up? And he looked at me like I was completely crazy. He said, what? I said, was I around enough as you were growing up? He said, you're around all the time. Like, well, you know, I wasn't, right? You remember, you did notice that I was gone, you know, like every other week for at least 3 or 4 days. He's like, yeah, I know, but I don't know. It's like, when you're here, you're totally here. Can we get back to the game now? And I'm like, yeah, we can get back to the game now. And we got back to the game. And to me, that was evidence in my life that the philosophy of be here now is an effective first step of creating a life of harmony versus balance. It releases you to understand the balance concept in a whole different way. Does that make sense?
I think that is like the biggest things most entrepreneurs struggle with.
Yeah.
Is being here right now.
Yeah. So go get a copy of that book. Who's in Your Room? The second to the last chapter talks about harmony and the secret to creating your best life.
Definitely. We'll put a link in the description for people.
Hey, thank you.
So before we conclude, we always ask this question. In your opinion, what is the difference between the entrepreneur and the power entrepreneur?
Well, define power entrepreneur to me.
That's up to your discretion on how to define it.
I don't know how to define it. You got to give me some framework. What in your mind is a power entrepreneur?
Everybody has their own definition.
Anybody can be an entrepreneur. Not everybody can be a successful entrepreneur. So if you define power entrepreneur as a successful entrepreneur, I would say the difference is they know how to work on the business and not in the business. Anybody can learn how to work in a business. Anybody can start a business. But learning how to work on the business versus in the business is the real trick. Learning how to hire people, how to manage people, how to train people, how to release responsibility and authority. That's what a successful entrepreneur does. If someone's thinking about becoming an entrepreneur, I think the first book they need to read is The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. It stands for The Entrepreneurial Myth by Michael Gerber. I read that book in the 80s and it absolutely changed the way I ran my business. And I didn't know Michael at the time, but I've gotten to know him very, very well. Great man and an icon in business. And I think the kinds of things that he talks about helps you become a successful entrepreneur. So if you would call a power person, that's it. Anybody can be an entrepreneur, but many entrepreneurs are nothing more than a solopreneur. They're basically they have a job that they own. And that's it. And you know, to me, entrepreneurship is about scaling. You don't have to scale it globally, like you said, but it's about scaling. It's about building a business, a legacy of some kind, a business that someday you can sell. That you're not, you know, you're not just working for a salary. You know, I think I've met a lot of entrepreneurs that made less money, way less money than if they were working for somebody else. And they weren't happy about it. They weren't happy about it. They wanted to make more. So, you know, to me, a power entrepreneur is probably a successful entrepreneur, and they got to learn how to work on the business.
Awesome. So, Dr. Awesome. How can people get in touch with you or to follow up if they have questions or to utilize your services?
So I have a blog. Everything up on the blog is free, except there are links to my books, of course. But I've been writing that blog since 2007. So I've got 12 years of worth of content there, twice a week since 2007. It's ivanmeisner.com, I-V-A-N Meisner, M-I-N-E-R.com. Anyone interested in BNI, go to BNI.com. And of course, who's in your room, you're going to put a link here, is available at bookstores and at amazon.com. And you know, go to my blog, and if you post a message, I read every message that goes up there. I don't always answer every message, but I read every message that goes up on my blog.
Awesome. Thank you very much for joining us today on the podcast.
Hey, my pleasure, gentlemen. These were great questions. Thanks.
Hey, you powerhouse. You made it to the end of the episode. Not everyone can do that. We really appreciate you listening to our show every week. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know. You can find us on social media by looking for The Power Entrepreneur. We're on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, even Twitter. Look for The Power Entrepreneur or go to our website, thepowerentrepreneur.com. If you really, really love the podcast, I'd highly appreciate it if you went on iTunes right now and left us a review. It helps us way more than you know. Go out there and make it a powerful life.